This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Yeah, and I was sitting here and I was like trying to catch my breath, but I didn't want to do it too loudly because then I'll be the guy that came on The A-Team and panted. But KYT didn't even give me a chance to catch my breath.
Jeremy, if I wanted to know how you were doing, I'm going to ask you on the fucking show, okay?
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by manadeprive.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
Anything that costs a shit ton of mana, you're just like, bang! And they're like, fuck.
How does that go?
Bang! Fuck.
Jay Boosh.
And that's like the hyper angle. I never want to play in another GP again. I never want to play in another GP.
And Jeremy.
And you're the reason I play Magic today. I'm like, I died. I was like just melting on the inside like that. I have inspired this kid to play Magic.
And now, the A-Team.
Hello and welcome to the A-Team. This is Jeremy Scumbag Schofield, coming at you with episode 253, insert title here. I've got with me Mr. KYT, laughing in the background. How you doing, buddy?
I'm feeling pretty good.
Fantastic. You know, it's Monday for us, so it's, you know, that first day of work, that first day of school for all you guys out there, seeing where we're at. With that in mind, Mr. Jay Boosh isn't going to be able to join us tonight. He's doing his electrician school, learning to not electrocute himself in the future. For the next few weeks here, he's going to be going at that. So he's going to be pretty hit or miss for the next few episodes. But KYT and I will come at you and give you some entertaining stuff to talk about.
I've been trucking it since day one.
Yeah, KYT just trucks it. He's just mono truck it. But with that in mind, also, we're going to be doing some quick early shout-outs to some sickos that qualified for the Pro Tour. Yeah. Mr. Robert Anderson and Mr. Doug Potter, who's actually joining us. So congrats, Doug, man.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. It's good to be back on the show. I had a brief two-minute appearance one time, but it's good to be back.
I think that was episode 50 or 100. I don't remember.
It was indeed.
Congratulations so much, Doug, especially since on Twitter I'd recently, I think, retweeted the Pro Tour Elo that someone was compiling, and your record's actually pretty damn good.
You know, Pro Tour. Yeah, actually, I was surprised, to be honest, when I looked at that Pro Tour Elo. It was I'm running positive, something like 27-21, I think. So,
well, you were one of the top, like, top tier of players, actually. I would think I was in the middle pack running at 50%. I didn't check Jeremy, but
don't check me.
Impressively hot higher than, like, you were close to, like, your Elo was close to certain some of the bigger names. I think off the top of my head, I don't really remember exactly where you were, but I remember being impressed.
Yeah, you know, I've been lucky. I've 2-1 to every draft pot I've played at a Pro Tour. I've never 3-0'd, but I've never gone worse. So that luck has followed me. I mean, I'm the guy who opened a pack rat pack 3 at a Pro Tour and just went into black. That's me. Hi. One four.
Sounds like Jeremy.
Yeah.
So, Joe Wolf, you're Silverheart every draft. Let's go.
Yeah. So yeah, it's it feels so good to be back. I mean, KYT, you totally understand, and I know Jeremy certainly will, but when you've, like, been to the Pro Tour, when you finally clinch back to the Pro Tour and you get to go back, and it's been like a year or more, that feeling, the last time I had that feeling was Barcelona, and I just was so stoked to be there. And so hopefully a Canadian can run good. Maybe we'll have like a Pascal win or something, or who knows. But I'm expecting a good Pro Tour for Canada at Atlanta.
So the RPTQ was, I believe Modern across the country.
Yep.
So tell me, did you do much preparation, and then what did you end up playing?
Well, I didn't actually prepare as far as playing games, but I did a lot of mental preparation. And I honestly think that my mental preparation is the reason why I won. So this came in a couple different ways for me. First off was metagaming. Now, I'm not very good at metagaming at all, but I'm lucky. I have a good friend named Lane Budgel. And I honestly think Lane is one of the best players at just identifying metagames that I know. He's always been very good at knowing what is good right now and what's up and coming. And I think that's because Lane also really likes to buy foils. He has the most impressive foil collection that I've seen. Lane's
foils are ridiculous.
Oh, he's like a foil.
And he's already sold out. He's already sold out at least once, you know, like he's sold his whole collection twice.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. It's disgusting.
But the reason why this is important is because he starts to figure out what's about to be good before it's good so that he can save money on foils. Now, I'm not joking. Well, he's never confirmed this, but I'm confident because he always knows what's about to be good or what's about to be played. He always does. Like, his metagaming is so on point. So a huge shout out to him, because I messaged him this week, like 6 days before the event, and said, Lane, tell me what to play and I'll play it. And he said, I'm a little busy. I'll message you back in a day or two. And a couple days later, he sent me a message and said, play Living End. And I looked at it and just thought, what? Living End? I'm not playing Living End. Are you kidding me? So I said, convince me. And he just explained to me, you know, the deck's really positioned well right now. Graveyard Hate's on the way out. Martin Miller went 4-0 with it at Worlds and then proceeded to win a WMCQ with it the next weekend. And so he said, just figure out, you know, how each deck is going to attack Living End and like where its crucial points are and how you can abuse that. And so that's really all I did. I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of thinking. I did a lot of visualizing, but not actually playing any matches. I played one match of Magic when I was borrowing the deck from Lane and my friend Huxley against this guy playing Slivers. He cast a Frenetic Sliver and I'm just like, are you fucking kidding me? I can never beat that card. Do you know what Frenetic Sliver even does? Like, it just says GG Living End. So that match didn't go very well, but he was a nice guy. So congrats to him, I guess. And then, yeah, that was all my preparation.
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah,
Doesn't that disgust you, KYT? Doesn't that disgust you?
That what?
That Doug is that good?
I mean, well, I never doubted his results were always like we talked about earlier, his PT results. So it didn't surprise me that he would actually get there. Living End has come and gone, has been on off and. It is interesting that it was actually a surprise to me that people were playing it. It was one the deck for one of the teams at the World Championships, as you mentioned, Martin Muller and his team played that. And but at one point, it was just one of those combo decks that were just always there and played small percentage of the field. It was like with those other type of decks that were similar to it. So it's pretty cool that it's one of the top meta calls at this point.
You know, it totally comes down to how much graveyard hate they have. Mm-hmm. And I know Jeremy could definitely talk about decks like Dredge Vine, and when your opponents have nothing, you just ranch them.
But yeah, you're completely unfair. Yeah,
it's as soon as the Tormod Crypt comes out, though, when you see that Tormod Crypt, you see that Rest in Peace, when you see that, well, Grafdigger's Cage doesn't really work against me.
No, but something like
Relic of Progenitus.
It's like, it's just like, I just need another card that, it's like, yeah, you're a piece of garbage.
Yeah, exactly. When those cards come out, you get hosed, but when they don't, I mean, I played against one Tormod's Crypt the entire day. It was in the quarters. It was the game I lost, and then all my other matches, I just wrote 2-0 on the slip, and I moved on with my life.
This somehow made me remember what my friend Frankie Richard for the WMCQ that happened in Toronto. You're reminding me of what his thought process was, because he was playing Red Green Tron, mm-hmm. and he convinced himself to shave all the relics from the main deck, mm-hmm. because he didn't feel like graveyard decks were that big in the format. So I guess people are still doing that, and this is the perfect place to be to just destroy everyone who thinks the graveyard isn't a place, like it's something that you need to care about anymore. But they're wrong.
Yeah, it's true. And there's a guy Jeremy knows well, his name's Greg Dolan. He's a Moto grinder and he's Tron for life, and he's won a Moto PTQ with Tron. He was at Barcelona when Hain took it down on the team with us, and he is playing one relic main and two side. And he told me when we were preparing for this event, yeah, he's cut down to three total. He told me, hey, play Tron, cut the relic main, put in Ceaseless Hunger instead. And I said, add the relic to the sideboard. And he's like, you probably don't need it. So if Greg is even down to two when he used to be four main deck for life,
yeah,
something's got to give.
Four was a standard. Wait, he's playing Ceaseless Hunger now?
Oh, yeah, Ulamog, the Ceaseless Hunger. Yeah, that guy, it's an insane main deck card in Tron. Tron was the other deck I was potentially going to play, and that card is bonkers in Tron. Like,
so one in the main, you think, is the going to be the new standard?
Yeah, because it's a 10 drop instead of an 11, and if I can express to you how good that is, that's two things. One, I'm going to express it right now.
Just go with it. Just go for it.
The first thing is, if you play full Urza Tron on turn three, which the deck can do, it's just one tower away from coming down on turn four. That's nuts.
Right.
Second thing, if you play full Tron like you do and follow it up with a Eye of Ugin, you can search it out and it's already costing nine. So you just need any land in your entire deck to be able to cast it on turn five. The third thing is, if you have one of the flawed draws with an early Ancient Stirrings or Pyroclasm like you sometimes have to do without a colored symbol from an artifact mana, you know you play like one of those lands that tap for red green and give your opponent a life, that draw can get 10 mana a lot easier than it can get 11 mana, because you go full Tron plus that land, you just need any power plant or mine for your turn five and you've got 10 mana. The difference between 10 and 11 is huge. The second thing, you exile two permanents.
Yeah,
I don't care what else it does. I don't care if it doesn't hit your opponent. I don't care if it doesn't annihilate. You exile two permanents when you cast it, and that is such a powerful effect, especially an effect that you can search out of your deck with Eye of Ugin.
So you were close to playing this particular deck.
Yep, I've probably played 15 PPTQs total and top aided 10 of them, and I think four of those were with Green Red Tron. It was the modern deck that I was just succeeding with the most. I had last played it. I was in the semifinals against my good friend Eric Chan. I was up a game and I just scooped him to the finals so he could have a shot to go to the RPTQ. And that was the last modern I'd played. So I thought, you know, Green Red Tron's going to be my horse. I have to play it. But Lane luckily intervened and he told me Living End's what's up. And I think that definitely won me. Living End just, it felt unfair the whole day. I got to cast Brindlebore too, which has been a dream of mine since that card was printed.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I always like to toot the Alberta horn, but that was a pretty Alberta stacked top eight there, wasn't it?
You know, it absolutely was. There was 44 players in the tournament, and between 16 and 18 of them were from Alberta. I say that because I confirmed with 16 of these guys, but someone else told me these other two guys that had left were Alberta. I just didn't get to confirm with them. So between 16 and 18 Albertans showed up, and of that, six of the top nine people were from Alberta. So we had five in the top eight, plus ninth place on tiebreakers was also Brian Sue from Alberta.
Oh, Bisu.
Yeah, he got ninth on breakers.
Wow.
He had one of the lowest tiebreaker percents you can almost possibly have in Magic. The lowest you can ever get is 33%, because if all your opponents went 06, the system just gives you 33%. I don't know if you knew that, but that's the lowest that a person can like offer you. Brian's tiebreakers were 37%. So he, needless to say, he knew he was winning into ninth, and we started saying, but Brian, what are the odds? Is it you know, 1%. And people are like, no, it's like 0.1%. And I'm like, don't take the man's hope. Don't take it away until they called ninth. Just always have hope. And then, of course, you know, they were like, oh, yeah, and in eighth place, this other guy. They didn't even say his name. And I was like, okay, no condolences. Just get out. Yeah, and the other three guys are actually from Seattle. So no Vancouver representation making the top eight. Sadly, that meant that there was one Alberta versus Alberta match, and that was me versus Robert Smith, a two-time GP champion. And there were three Seattle versus Alberta matches, and Seattle won all three. So that's
oof, the sweep. Friend of the show, Curly.
Yeah, friend of the show, Curly.
Yeah,
he lost a very heartbreaking match to a guy that, let's just say, I came prepared for a scumbag story because when I played him, it was a scumbag moment. This guy, sadly, against Curly, he cast a second Blood Moon and was complaining that he was so unlucky that he drew it, not realizing that it made his Kuranos active, and proceeded to complain for two or three straight turns about the fact that he kept drawing Blood Moons, not attacking with said Kuranos.
Wow!
And Curly was ahead on life. They both had Kuranos out, and just didn't. The flips didn't go his way.
One of the Kuranoses just was standing by the water cooler.
Well, yeah, one of the Kuranoses was like walking around in circles, and the other one was just like waiting for his legs to come out of the ground so he can attack. I would have loved if Curly had like attacked with it, and then his opponent had been frustrated and scooped, not realizing he could just block. That would have been great. But oh well.
Like, do you run that gambit if you actually get yourself into the spot where you realize your opponent is not attacking with the Kuranos? They don't realize it's a creature. Do you make that attack? Like, just like, do I just try and run the gambit?
In my opinion, the answer depends on if you can live by him attacking back. Because as soon as you attack, it's going to give him the information, right? But that is a good point you bring up. That's a big part of Magic is it's not all about doing the obvious play. Sometimes you have to go to the next level.
Yeah, just like, I got to run the bluff. I got to just run it out and see if I can catch. Doesn't mean cheat. Don't bluff like in cheat, but like sometimes you just got to do the non-obvious thing.
Oh, yeah. I actually, the scumbag story involves that, so I'll either save that for later, or maybe I'm teasing you enough that I can get into
it. No, let's just get right into it. Like, this is episode get right into it. Normally, before the episode, we sit there and we kind of shoot the shit for 10 minutes, but KYT came on, he's like, all right, how's it going, guys? All right, Jer, so you want to start us off? Let's go.
Let's go, man.
Let's go. Let's just go.
We always talk about things that we want recorded anyways, is that the issue, so...
Yeah, and I was sitting here and I was like trying to catch my breath, but I didn't want to do it too loudly because then I'll be the guy that came on the A team and panted. But KYT didn't even give me a chance to catch my breath.
Jeremy, if I wanted to know how you were doing, I'm going to ask you on the fucking show, okay?
Okay, can I just make a side note? I'm in a modern finals as this is happening because I was in the tournament already and I thought KYT would shoot the shit for a little bit. And my opponent just sacked a martyr and I'm casting an Atarka's command in response. First time that's got to happen, but you don't get to gain life, buddy. Okay, so you ready for the scumbag story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so the best part about this scumbag story is it involves two scumbags. Ooh. The first one being my opponent. The second one being the guy getting scumbagged who decided the best way to respond was to be a scumbag, Doug Potter. So here's what happened. Sit down for my match, and my opponent, you know, he's shuffling up, and I sat next to him in round one, and he's that kind of guy that he tells you his Pro Tour resume while you're shuffling up, and he goes on about how he has to mulligan and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just who he is, right? So he's that guy. So I already know he's that guy. And I kind of recognize him. Turns out he wins a lot of Seattle PTQs. He made sure he let me know after the match that Travis Wu and him worked on Living End together when he invented it. And I was like, cool. But he's that guy. So whatever. We're sitting down, we're shuffling. And I'm going to go ahead and concede this modern match because I really want to focus on the story. I don't want to win some play points. Okay. So I give him his deck back and I say, good luck. And he says, thanks, I'll play. And immediately in my head, I'm like, really? You're that guy? You're just going to run the thanks. Like, yeah, I do want good luck. So in my head, I'm already thinking, okay, Doug, don't be an asshole.
What the fuck?
Like, for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, this is like you're playing for top eight. You're both 3-0. The winner's going to get to double draw. If someone says good luck, I think the appropriate responses are don't say anything or say you too, but not thanks. Like, I do want all the luck. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm like old school like that. You know, my first GP was 05. Like, I've been around the block as far as, you know, the whole etiquette shifts in the game. But to me, I'm like, that's a little bit of a dagger, but that's okay. That's just a tiny dagger. So we're going to play. So we're going through the game. And in the game, I'm just hosed, basically. I feel like I can't win. I've got no action in my hand, no violent outburst type card. He's clicked me, and I've got a graveyard with some creatures, but I can't even kill him in one turn if I hit, and I'm just kind of screwed. And all I've done this game is I've fulminated two of his land, so he only has three land, which the entire time, all he's done is bitched about the fact that he can't draw more land as he's beating me into oblivion. And I'm okay. Sitting there, and I'm like, really? You're going to bitch about the fact that you only have three land when I like can't even kill you if I draw my card, and I'm not drawing my card, and you're keeping up counter mana every turn? Like, I can't ever resolve this card. You just cast a remand and I'm dead. Like, I'm thinking in my head, you are being so salty and you're winning. So I start to develop in my head, what is my strategy? How can I tilt him? That's what I'm thinking. So at one point he cracks a fetch land and I'm shuffling his deck, and he reaches his hand to grab the deck. So I look at him and I give it a couple more shuffles, and he says, he's like, you think it's shuffled enough? And I'm like, okay, I'm going to give it a couple more shuffles. And then I do that thing where when you give it back to them, you cut it back to them, you know, you put half of it down and then half of it. And as soon as I put half of it down, he grabs it to draw a card. He's like, oh, I'm like, man. So I put the rest of the deck down. I'm like, this guy is just savage. Okay, whatever. So I'm trying to concoct a plan, like how I can get him on tilt. So I decide I go for an end step Beast Within, which he counters, tapping low enough that I say, like, I untap and I draw. He only has two mana. And I get excited, like I've drawn a Dread Return or a Violent Outburst. I cast a Fulminator Mage with two mana up, and I have a Simeon Spirit Guide in my hand, which he has peaked.
Oh, dirty!
Yeah, he's peaked me, so he knows the contents of my hand. Like, he saw it. So I play the Fulminator, and I say, want to remand it? And he's like, no. I'm like, okay, it resolves. Sack, kill your only blue source. And I say it like that. I say, kill your only blue source. And he's like, okay, floated blue. I'm like, cool. Second main phase, mana pool empties. And he's like, oh. And I'm like, cool. And I start to tap my two land. And then I'm like, I didn't draw it, go. And he's like, oh, so he's all like relieved, you know.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, so he's back down to three lands. And I'm like, that was worth the little, you know, the little bit of fun that it was. So he peeks me with that blue mana that he had. He'd already peeked me the previous turn. So he knows the whole contents of my hand. He knows I don't have the combo. He untaps, he hits me down. So I'm at eight life. And he says, go. And I've decided, I have one way of winning this game, and I've already spent all this time thinking about how I'm going to do it. So I untap, I draw, and as I'm drawing, I see it's Violent Outburst. I sigh really loud. I go, like, move my hands like I'm about to scoop. I stop for a second. I say, what am I at? He's like, eight. I go, Blackleaf Cliffs tapped, go. And I sit back in my chair all dejected. He goes, Snapcaster, bolt you. I say, cool. With that on the stack, Violent Outburst. His face was just pure shock, like unadulterated, like, and he just hits his hands down and he goes, I can't believe I punted this game. So does the Violent Outburst resolve? He's like, what has happened? Have you lost the life? What is this in response to? And I'm like, I said in response to the bolt. So it all resolves. He untaps, he draws, he surveys the situation, he concedes, and we move on to game two. So I'm shuffling up, and I'm like super pumped. I'm like, this is great. This is so great. This guy's like on tilt. So game two, I mull. Game progresses a bit. He peeks me. He sees my hand. He knows the whole contents of my hand. He knows that I can't get him with a combo. He's good to go. Not to mention the only two creatures in my graveyard are an Architect's Will and a 3/4 that I'd cycled for 2 life. And he says go, and I draw a Ricochet Trap. And I'm like, yes, this guy just peeked me. He will never suspect I have a Ricochet Trap because he's that kind of player. Like, for sure. So I play Dread Return, and I'm like, cycle to the card. And he's like, before like I even start cycling, he's like, you know I'm just going to remand it. And I'm like, okay, well, does the Cascade resolve? He's like, yeah, sure. So I cycle, get to the Living End, put it on the stack. He's like, remand it. Like, he's been cocky. He's like, you know I'm just gonna remand it, bro. He's like, remand it. I'm like, okay, remove a Simeon Spirit Guide because I didn't have any mana up. Ricochet trapped it, bounce my Dread Return. I'm like, I guess I'll get to cast another one next turn too, hey? he's like, oh, so whatever. The two creatures come in, and when I Architects of Will him, I see his top 3 cards, and he has a Teferi and 2 other cards that I don't really care about. I'm like, well, shit. I don't want him to draw Teferi. That card's like really good against me, right? So yeah. Anyways, pass the turn. He draws one of them. Teferi's now 2 from the top. He plays land. He says go. I attack him down to 8. And at the end step, he peeks. And I'm thinking, shit. He's going to get to draw a card, right? Then he's going to get to untap. And he's going to draw, and he's going to play a Teferi. So he looks at my hand, and all I have is a Violent Outburst, a Dread Return. I have 5 lands in play. And a Simeon Spirit Guide and nothing else. Maybe a beast with him, but it doesn't matter. So he untaps, draws, and I'm like thinking in my head, how can I win this game? He's at 8, and all he has to do is flash Teferi when I attack. And if he blocks, it's over. Like, I can't win. Because I don't know if you know how Teferi works, but basically I can't cast cards off the Cascade. Because yeah. You put the Cascade on the stack, you Cascade into the Living End. You can't cast a spell at instant speed, and technically, since your original spell's on the stack, it's now instant speed.
Yeah.
So okay. Teferi just like fucks me. So I, in this moment, I'm thinking, how can I bait him to totally mess up? The fact that he's peaked me, I should have no way of winning this game. But because I've just been in his head, I have a plan. So he untaps and he draws, and I say, wait, did your peak let you draw? You drew a card off peak, right? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh shit, Teferi. And he's like, draws it, because he didn't know he was drawing it, right? So I'm like, oh shit, Teferi, right as he's drawing it. So he slams a land, taps 5, plays a Teferi, all excitedly, and all he has left is 2 fetch lands. He's at 8. And I'm like, sweet, thanks. And he says, what do you mean, thanks? You know how Teferi works, right? And I'm like, yeah, I know how Teferi works. And so I untap, I draw, and I go, Dread Return your Teferi, and he says, you can't cast the card off Cascade. And I'm like, yeah.
But it can't block.
I know how Teferi works. Does the Dread Return Cascade trigger? I go to it, I'm like, yeah, I can't cast it, shuffle it. I'm like, Dread Return resolves, and he looks at the life pad, and he looks at his 2 fetch lands, and he looks at my 6 points, and he's at 8, and he's like, oh, shit. He's like, yeah, it resolves. I'm like, remove the Simeon Spirit Guide. I'd drawn an untapped land, but I wanted to really show him that I had all of this in my hand when he peeked me. I'm like, remove the Simeon Spirit Guide. Cast Violent Outburst to make my creatures lethal. Cascade trigger. And he's like, looks at his cards, looks at his fetch lands, trying to do math. He's like, I can fetch twice and remand that. I'm like, cool, then you'll be at 6. And he's like, oh, I can't believe I threw away both games too. You're so bad, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just sitting there just like smiling, just like, you know, I do the attack and whatever. And he's like, I can't believe how lucky you are. And I'm just like, well, man, hopefully that continues while I'm in the top 8. And then I get up and I walk away.
Wow.
So it was a long story, but it involved an opponent being a jerk, me handling it appropriately, and getting in his head to out-scum the scumbag. Got him.
That's awesome. I love the tilt stories and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure, like, didn't you guys have a strategy at the Pro Tour Miracles there for how to tilt people with miracles?
Basically, there was an article Hain wrote before the Pro Tour, and it just talked about like every time that we drew a miracle, just like acting so excited that we got it, even though our deck played 16 of them. So considering we were think twice on end step, we were actually a favorite. Like, we were a mathematical favorite to hit one every single turn cycle. But when you act excited, people think you got lucky. They don't know you placed 16.
You hit the miser one.
Yeah. They don't realize that 16 times 2 is 32, which at that point in the game is like, okay, that's not exactly how the math works. But the point is, you know what I'm saying, right? If you think twice end step and then you untap draw, one of those two mathematically should probably be a miracle. When there's like 40 cards left in your deck, right?
Yeah.
Get people a little on edge. And once they're a little on edge, you can play them like a fiddle. It's so cool.
Oh, man. I could never do that type of stuff, but I could never pull it off.
I think you could. I think it's admirable that you don't want to, because, as I said, I was equally a scumbag in that story. But I just, you know, people listening at home, Prodigal Son, if you're taking notes, everyone who's out there, the moral of the story is when your opponent says good luck, just say good luck. That's it. Moral of the story.
Especially if he's Doug Potter.
Yeah.
Well, it just talks about like how much more there is to the game. Like, you can play the game mechanically so well, but there's still that other aspect to it. You know, it's when you compare Magic to something like, again, when I talk to the muggles, to the lay people, I always say it's a combination between poker and chess. You can play the chess aspect of Magic extremely well, but if you can game them a little bit with the poker, get in their head, get them excited, get them distracted, get them doing something that's not playing structured Magic, you can abuse them. You can take advantage of them.
Yeah, I honestly believe that had I not acted the way I did when I drew the Violent Outburst, he probably would have just kept up counter mana. Because he wanted to reduce it to a one-turn clock by snap bolting, then attacking for 5. That's a total of 8. But he wouldn't have done that, I think, if he had fear of me drawing it. So yeah, I mean, you don't have to do it, but I think it's something that you definitely can do, and it works.
Yeah.
I think one of the upcoming GPs, GP Pittsburgh, is Modern. Doug, do you have any recommendations for some of the listeners of what do you think they should be playing?
They should become friends with Lane Budgell. No, I'm just kidding. On Magic Online, I've actually been playing it's called Green Red Aggro on Star City Games, the most recent open, but it's really the Naya Blitz, because it's a green, white, red aggro deck playing Flint Hoof Boar, Goyf, Burning Tree Emissary, Wild Nacatl, Experiment 1. It's really saucy. And the thing about Modern, and I've listened to so many people that are really good at Modern come through this podcast, and what they often tell people is you should play the deck you're most comfortable with. So my first piece of advice is whatever that deck is that you've been pet decking, just play it. Like, it's great. If you don't have one of those decks yet and you don't consider yourself an expert, if you don't play aggro, you really better have a very strong base of knowledge for everything your opponents could possibly do to you in the match. Because if you don't have that base of knowledge, you will throw away a lot of matches. Aggro can get around that, because when you just cast turn 2 Burning Tree Emissary into Burning Tree Emissary into whatever good one drop, this deck plays Vexing Devil to make sure your experiment ones just go crazy. Wow. So you can go like, yeah, you can go Emissary into Curd Ape. Your turn 1 experiment one is now 3/3 into Vexing Devil. It's now a 4/4. Vexing Devil triggers. They take 4, attack for 4. And you're sitting there with, 10 power on the board. All you got to do is look over at them at that point and say, that's what you call the Naya Blitz, go. And aggro has that power. And I honestly think that that's where you should start. If you're a more experienced player that doesn't have a pet deck yet, and you're kind of gearing up and you really want to, you know, try these new Star City Opens. They just announced today their organized play changes. There's going to be a lot of Modern Opens. But if you want to really kind of get into that scene, I'd say Twin's a great choice still. There's lots of Twin around. Robots is always a good choice. And don't play Living End, because the more people that play it, the worse it's going to get. And I won't be playing Living End at any upcoming tournament. So
you'll go back to the green-red? Back to the throne?
Why not?
Why not? Because I think I attacked a specific part of a metagame, and okay. I think that I honestly think when you lose to a deck like that, it just kind of leaves an imprint on you. Like, it just leaves something on you. where you think, you know what? I could have avoided that if I paid 25 cents to my local gaming store and bought the fucking Tormod scripts. And that kind of feeling you don't shake. Like, people don't shake that, you know? Believe me, I've lost a dude storm. You don't shake that shit. Dude storm. I'm telling you. I'm not even just playing into the hand that I'm dealt being on this podcast, giving all these references. Like, I've lost that deck. And you remember. You remember.
Yeah, it can be hot garbage, but it can work. Every now and then it works.
So I think Twin's a great place to go. But I've had good success when people just tell me what's the best in a specific metagame. Like, my last modern PTQ win was with Lanthier Jund. Lanthier told me Bloodbraid Elf was just banned. And he said to me at GP Quebec City, the previous GP Quebec City, that I should just play Profane Command in that slot and just surprise people and just stick with the same Jund deck, just -4 Bloodbraid, +2 Profane Command, +1 Thrun main deck, and +1 extra removal spell. And I said, okay. And then I want a PTQ with it. So find people that know more than you and ask them. Even if you
and
feel
then
like
you're listen to them.
And then listen to them. Yeah. Don't say but just listen to them.
Doug, you mentioned it really quickly, but was the red green deck aggro deck that you just talked about on the SCG that just won, was that the one you were just playing on Modo right now?
Yeah, I was just up a game in the finals of just a three rounder, and I just can speak to him so I could focus. But yeah, the deck's pretty sweet.
Okay, so you actually think it's a real deal, and it's not, because we haven't seen something like this be successful, right, in the modern metagame.
Yeah, well,
in a while.
The words "the modern metagame" always surprise me, because there's not a lot of modern tournaments. Pro tours are always like 2 weeks after a ban restricted list, so yeah. They're not the right versions ever.
No, they're exploratory.
Yeah, exactly. It's exploratory. And you have to also come into decks to beat an explored metagame. You have to come up with decks to beat an unexplored metagame, right? So you can't play like good control decks, because good control decks, you need to know what your opponents are playing. Unless you're Sean McLaren and you come up with a great control deck, that strategy usually doesn't play out at modern Pro Tours. You know, you want to show up with the deck that just either catches people off guard, like I think of Sam Black with that Blazing Shoal deck. You want to be the guy that gets the card banned. That's always a fun thing. Or just play the strong aggro deck, and then you can just come in and actually have a real shot. So.
All right, I'm going to keep this in mind if I do end up going to GP Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Do you have any upcoming events, Doug?
You know, I was looking into it, and I actually had taken a little bit of a step back from playing Magic competitively. I didn't play many PPTQs for the season I qualified. I just showed up to an Origins one and read the cards and got really lucky, opened a bunch of rares and won it. So I don't think I'm going to PPTQ for season 4. I'm not going to any GPs currently. I'm planning on doing a birthday bash for GP Detroit, which is in March 5th and 6th, and then staying for a week in the States and then going to the team GP. But other than the Pro Tour, I'm probably just going to focus on work, focus on judging, and Nia Blitz online. I don't know.
Nia Blitz. Nia Blitz. Nia Blitz.
And girls in Starbucks.
I mean, I do like the cold approach. That is, there's a certain exhilaration that is brought on by a fat nerd realizing he can have confidence.
And I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Doug, thank you so much for being on. And I can't wait to see what your team looks like for the PT. And I wish you luck. And I'm sure we're going to have you back on the show at some point.
Yeah, it'll be February 7th after I win the Pro Tour.
Got it.
Okay, cool.
For sure.
Locked right, in.
Cool.
Thanks a lot, Doug.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Doug. Stay classy. See you, boys.
So now we just had Doug, and now we're going to have my friend, fellow co-worker, Montreal's greatest has-been.
Yep.
Someone who had past success, but somehow decided to, well, not decide, that's the wrong word, but somehow
to be bad,
suck at, be bad, decided to be bad. Robert Anderson, how's it going, Rob?
Not too shabby.
What a terrible intro.
Yeah, might want to like edit that in the future, maybe.
I think
he's just clarifying because, like, when I started out, like, well, not really started out, but like, I had like a year where I had like a ton of success and people thought I was super good, but I really like wasn't. I was just getting really lucky. And then, like, I was grinding PTQs at the same time as Alex Hain, and yeah. I won, like, we were going to the same PTQs. And I think I won three of them before he won one. He was constantly in the finals, and it was really discouraging. So, like, I think some people actually thought that I might be better than him, but they were, like, totally wrong. So, yeah, I mean, I won a bunch of PTQs and went to the Pro Tour a few times. Never did that well. I think my best finish was, like, 54th or something, and Philadelphia, the launch of Modern, which was kind of a disaster. But yeah, so after that, I never really stopped trying. I probably stopped trying a little bit less, but I'm actually back on a roll. The last three like big-ish tournaments that I've gone to, like, I'm not saying like big, I'm saying like tournaments that matter to qualify for stuff. Like, I won a PPTQ to qualify for this regional, for the regional PTQ that happened on Halloween, and then I won the first PPTQ to qualify for the next RPTQ in February or January or whatever it is, and then I went to the RPTQ on Saturday and top board. So I mean, I'm sort of got my groove back, I guess you could say.
Man, we don't need to edit any part of my intro after that amazing MTG career intro that you just gave us, right? Right, Jared? You just gave us everything.
Did he just start the match with his Magic career?
Sure. I don't know what that means, but yeah.
It's literally like a 45-minute-old inside joke.
Oh,
you'll have to listen to the episode.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know. No.
I do have to say, like, I'm looking at your article on Mana Deprived, and the deck is interesting.
Jeremy, what's the article called?
Bringing My Career Back to Light.
Which is an awesome title.
That is a title made by Mr. Car Young Tom. I had nothing to do with it, so he gets all credit.
So we've seen this coming up in a lot of MTGO decks, this idea. Well, at least that's where I first saw this concept of merging, or maybe some lists on the SCG circuit of merging Scapeshift. Well, not merging, but adding Bring to Light to Scapeshift. And in the article, you mentioned you tested it in a bunch of league matches, but not to any exceptional finishes, right, Rob?
I mean, yeah, I had some moderate success. I liked the deck a lot, and I wasn't doing that well. I think a lot of the problems were, honestly, me just not playing very well. It's a very difficult deck to play, actually. And there are... Modern is a format that is very matchup-dependent, and there are some matchups that are very difficult and some draws that you can't beat and things like that. And on Magic Online, I think it's very difficult to have consistent good results in a format like Modern. I mean, I'd say my sample size is probably kind of small.
Yeah.
But just the nature of the format, I think that it's a lot of the matches are not as in your control as they would be in something like Standard or Draft. A lot of it, the game sort of play out in a specific way, assuming there's unfair decks. Like, when you have a couple of fair decks going against each other, then you can get some interesting matches. But if you get, I saw some just looking at the RPTQ, you get matchups like Infect against Tron or Storm against, like, I don't know, something slow, and the matches are just over before they really begin. And you get some of that with Scapeshift too. For some reason on Magic Online, I went against like mono white or red white Hate Bears deck a lot. And I know that that deck was non-existent at the RPTQ, which doesn't surprise me because it's not really, I don't know what other metagames are like, but in Montreal, people don't really play that deck. And that's the kind of deck that when I went against it online, I can't really beat it, especially since I wasn't playing Lightning Bolt. You just can't beat like Lane and Arbiter, Thalia, Aven Mind Sensor. Yeah. I even like went against a red-white one that was also playing Magus of the Moon and Avalanche Riders and like just completely miserable. But, you know, I like to complain about matchups a lot, and that's certainly like a lot of my league matches are just like, man, there's just no way I can win. I mean, it's possible that had I played a bit differently, I could have won, but I definitely can't complain about the matchups I got at the RPTQ. And I think that as far as calling a metagame is concerned, I did it pretty well, which is kind of a big part of Modern, incidentally, is really being able to call the metagame. But I mean, you know, when you're on Magic Online, the metagame is so diverse that you really have no idea what you're going to go up against.
Well, that's very interesting because Doug was saying that same thing, that was the biggest boost to him. But I'm still for him winning his RPTQ with Living End in Vancouver.
Oh, he played Living End.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
But I'm still confused why you ended up like with those results and you playing bad with the deck. You still stuck to your guns.
I try to not be results oriented, especially when dealing with Magic Online. I mean, I don't really have a lot of time to play local events in real life. Well, first of all, now that I won two PPTQs, I have the like first world problem of not being able to go to tournaments on weekends. Which is like, you know, a bit of a downside with this new system, but because of my work schedule and my like girlfriend and stuff, I don't really want to stay at a Magic store on a weekday and play a tournament until 10 or 11 at night. So most of my testing comes from playing Magic Online. And I'm comfortable with that. I think if I were testing for like a pro tour or something, I wouldn't be testing on Magic Online as much. I would build decks in real life and play against real people. It's really interesting because on Magic Online, I find that you make mistakes that you wouldn't make in real life and vice versa. I think you use completely different parts of your brain when you're playing on a digital medium and when you're playing like with actual cards. There's just things that, you know, I would never do on Magic Online, like, you know, not be aware of how many mountains I have left in my deck, or it's kind of hard to explain, but I'm pretty sure that people who have a lot of experience playing both on Magic Online and on paper could probably vouch for it as well. That it's
absolutely 100%. Yeah. Because yeah. Magic Online, you're riding a ride. You know, you don't have to actively do things. You just have to press OK. And if you know what the F buttons are on your keyboard, unlike goodness, who is that on? There's one guy who makes videos for SCG that are Sam Black. Sam Black doesn't know what an F key is.
Oh, really?
Oh, man. You watch any of his videos and you hear every mouse click. Yeah, as far as it goes, like if you know what your F keys are, you can just hit F6 and you can just zone out of the game. You can alt tab and read an article or something like that. You can easily fall off of it because you don't have to actively keep the game going. You don't have to pay attention to what your opponent's doing. You don't have to do all these different things, so you're not as engaged.
Yeah, I mean it's sort of interesting that you say that, because I remember when Dan Lancier, I talked to Dan a lot on Facebook and stuff like that. And I mean, he's given me a lot of pretty good advice because he's been really successful lately. And I told you that recently I've been doing well, but for the past 2 years before that, I wasn't really putting up any results, even though I was still playing on Magic Online pretty consistently. And I remember asking Dan at one point, like, you know, what am I doing wrong? I used to be able to win PTQs like nobody's business, and now I'm, you know, constantly scrubbing out of tournaments, and it's getting pretty discouraging. And even though I'm playing like 20 to 40 hours of Magic Online a week, which is more like I'm pretty sure that there are some points where I'm playing more Magic than like a lot of pros are. And he told me that people say that practice makes perfect, but it's really perfect practice makes perfect. And I think that like made a lot of sense, because a lot of the time that I was on Magic Online, and still nowadays, sometimes I'll join an event just because I'm bored and not because like I really want to win or get better or something. And I will just like not play optimally. I will watch a stream or, you know, do something else on the other monitor while I'm playing Magic Online. Sometimes I just feel like cracking packs and I'll just join a draft, draft a crappy deck, get pissed off that I didn't open the money mythic rare, and then like, you know, just like lose round one. Even if it's like a Swiss event where I can still win packs, like if I lose round one, like I'll drop, you know? And
it's degenerate.
Yeah, you know, and just like,
yeah.
I mean, it's there's a lot of things that you can do, but definitely like if you're gonna practice a format, and I feel that like with playing the leagues in on Magic Online, I was practicing with Scapeshift. I wasn't just like jamming games because I was bored. Like I felt like I was actually getting better. And that's one of the reasons I stuck with my guns. Also because like I didn't really have a choice. Like I don't think that you should audible to a deck unless you're like super comfortable with it. And it's funny because I've had a lot of success with Twin, but I'm still not very comfortable beating out Hate. There's some people who are totally fine with like, oh, I Vendilion Cleat you and you have two Rending Volleys in your hand. Like, I'm just gonna like kill you with incremental like damage with Snapcaster, Bolt, Pester Mite, like that kind of stuff. But for me, like when I play a deck like Twin, I really want to just combo and not think about it. And if my opponent is playing cards like Rending Volley or Abrupt Decay, I don't think that I have enough experience to like be able to switch gears in the right way. Like there's people who used to, like Fairies is a great example of a deck that like was able to do that really well. Like in the span of one turn, you can go from like control to aggro and stuff like that. But for me, I don't feel that I'm good enough to do that. So Scapeshift is really a one-dimensional deck, and it's just cast one spell, and if it resolves, it's like game over.
You win.
Yeah. And that, you know, worked out for me pretty well. And in that tournament, it definitely worked. I mean, I did get a little bit lucky. There were two games where I had to draw like a specific card or a specific, like I had a low number of outs and I got there. But you know, in order to win a tournament with relatively good players, you need to do that like number of times.
Yeah, one of your matches where you had to, you know, your opponent had to shuffle your deck before you drew your next card, and if it was a Scapeshift or a break, it brought back like memories of where I lost to Scapeshift, where, you know, their out is in the older version, it's either Scapeshift itself, it could be a Snapcaster Mage getting back a discarded a Scapeshift that I discarded earlier, to get there, or it could even be like, I don't know, a Cryptic Command to buy themselves one more turn, and then draw, have an extra draw. So, you know, that feeling is, it's always there when playing with or against Scapeshift. So I wanted to know, Rob, do you think this is going to be the de facto, this the default build, this Bring to Light? Do you think it was so good for you that you think this is the way Scapeshift to go from here on out?
I haven't tested it without enough to know. I was actually one of my friends at the RPTQ that I was rooting for was Mike Brierley. And I lost the first round of the RPTQ, but Mike was actually 3-0 going into the fourth round. And he ended up losing to the next two rounds. He lost to two people who top eighted, one of them playing Tarmo Twin and one of them playing Affinity. But Mike was playing just straight up rug scapeshift. And he had a couple of cards that are pretty good if that's the kind of thing that you're looking for. I mean, he was playing stuff like Giga Drowse. And Giga Drowse is a great way to break, to be able to be sure that your scapeshift resolves.
Right.
Whereas my plan was sort of more of a play more cards that they have to counter and then they have to run out.
But, right.
It seems that in Modern, there aren't really that many decks that are playing a ton of hard counters. I mean, the Grixis control deck, which was, as I thought it would be, the most played deck at the RPTQ, it has a split of Remands and Mana Leaks and maybe two Cryptic Commands, and that's it. And since Scapeshift is resilient to discard because it has a lot of ways of either you can draw Scapeshift, you can draw Bring to Light, you can draw Anticipate, Cryptic, Snapcaster. You have a lot of cards that, like, if you draw
a deck acceleration, like the ability to go through your deck and find the cards you need.
And you're thinning your deck by ramping. And there's all kinds of, like, Liliana doesn't bother me as much as it does. When I play Twin and they resolve a Liliana, it's kind of annoying. I mean, I guess you have, like, Bolt, Snap, Bolt and stuff, but against if you're playing Twin and you have no board and no hand, you're in trouble because you do need two cards to win, and you're in trouble against creature removal and stuff like that. But with Scapeshift, honestly, as long as I have seven lands, it doesn't matter what they have in play. Like, if I draw that Scapeshift, they're dead. All they can do is have a counterspell, and I mean, most of the time it's really the game, you set it up in such a way that they've exhausted their resources and they don't have counter spells. They might have a little bit of pressure on the board, but there were a couple of games, like there was one match where I was against Jund, and he had a Liliana and a Goyf that was like a 3-4, and I was at 20 life and I wasn't concerned at all. I knew that, like, I did brick for a few turns, but then I drew an Electrolyze to damage his Liliana a little bit so it wouldn't be able to ultimate me. And then after a couple of turns, I drew a Cryptic and then an Anticipate and got there, you know, like it's your odds of drawing a Scapeshift or a card that gets Scapeshift are very high.
I've known, it's cool you brought up Brierley because him and Andrew, I've seen them both play Scapeshift since I can remember, and both of them to some degree of success, some number of PTQ top eights. Yep. So they know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Brierley, because I asked Dan, because Dan Lancia came down for the RPTQ just to be with Brierley. I think he promised him that they would go down together, but since Dan won the GP, he couldn't play in the RPTQ anymore. So then I just told Dan, like, oh, I see that Brierley and I came to the same conclusion of what to play. And he said, oh, have you met Brierley? Because, like, Scapeshift is all he plays. So I was like, okay, like, because I was actually probably, I was seriously considering playing Twin. You know, I just decided to go with Scapeshift, and I'm glad I did, obviously. But to be completely honest, I think that the odds of me playing Scapeshift at the Pro Tour are probably pretty low. Because I just think that when you're against, like, much better players, I mean, I don't know, I could end up playing it, but I think that there's going to be new cards and they're probably going to unban some stuff or ban some stuff. And the metagame is going to change to a point where like it might not be good anymore. And I actually don't like the matchup against the Naya burn deck or like the Atarka red kind of thing. But I think that kind of deck is going to be pretty popular at the Pro Tour.
Hmm. Yeah, Doug was saying that he liked the looks, and he's just playing it online already, which is the green red aggro deck that just won the Modern Open recently. And from reading your report again, I have to say, like, you know, the last match, I think your opponent basically had you, and because of his mistakes, you were able to win. So even though Scape Chip happened to be the right choice, sort of, because you ended up winning, it just seemed like at least two or three rounds, your opponent just found themselves a way to lose the games while I was reading the report. So then it didn't give me that much confidence.
I think it was just the last round, actually, that I noticed my opponent like not play. Like, it was just, I won game one. I don't know what was in his hand the whole game, but it felt like I was in control of the game pretty well. But game two, he 100% would have won had he played better. And then there would have been a game three, and we don't know what would have happened. But I think that although I like the Scapeshift deck, and I think it was right for this tournament, it may not be right for the next one. And it's really like, it's a metagame deck, you know. And I thought there was going to be a lot of mid-rangey stuff, and there was. And it's worked out pretty well. And I also like the deck a lot against Affinity, which was a big selling point for me, because just being able to bring to light for Shatterstorm is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I love that, that part of the report where you talked about that specifically, those instances.
Yeah.
And it's great to see that, like, you were high on Bring to Light before it came out, and it's, you know, and you won an RPT with the card. And Jared, you were pretty excited about the card for Modern.
Yeah.
And, you know, are you excited to try something like this?
Actually, I've been looking at this list, and I'm like, you know, I think I could actually build this online. I've got pretty much all of this stuff, so I might go and take her for a spin.
Yeah.
I love the Hunting Wilds.
Yeah, Hunting Wilds, it's funny because whenever people look at the deck list, that's the first card that jumps out, and they're just like, why are you playing this? And I didn't really get it at first, because when I was first thinking of Scapeshift, I was like, yeah, you know, if you Scapeshift for four and you need a ramp spell, you can get like Explosive Vegetation. And that's sort of like as far as my thinking went. But then when I saw lists online playing Hunting Wilds, I'm like, oh, like that's just completely better. But I will admit that I do board out Hunting Wilds a lot.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a number five, right? Like it's just an additional search effect. I imagine you never kicked it.
Nope. I've never, there was one match where I wanted to kick it, but I had boarded it out because I was against, this was on Magic Online, and I was against Affinity, and he did something like turn one, Signal Pest, Ornithopter, and I had an Anger of the Gods in my hand. I was like, okay, like this game's going to be pretty easy. And then he went turn two, Stay in the Mind. And I was like, uh-oh. And he extracted all my Scape Shifts. And I actually was like, well, I'm not going to scoop, but I ended up winning just by beating down with the one Snapcaster and Tribe Elders. Like, yeah. Because I Wrath is board, and then I was able, this was post board, so I had Ancient Grudge, I had Shatterstorm, I was able to whittle him down to, like, actual nothing. I electrolyzed all of his man lands and stuff like that. But that is another sort of side thing. If you get your Scapeshift extracted somehow, it's a win condition. Not a good one, obviously, but it's a way to win.
It does the job.
Yeah, definitely does the job.
No, I love it. This deck looks fun.
Yeah.
What would you change?
Well, considering I didn't change anything from the list that I took from Star City, I would say, like, it's since it's a metagame deck, there's not much room to move around. I think that you have to play the four Obstinate Ballasts, and I think that they're amazing. for now, the only card that I didn't really use was Slaughter Games.
Okay.
Which is interesting because that's like looks really sweet when you're looking at the deck list. You're like, oh, sweet, you can Slaughter Games people out. But honestly, that card is only really good in the mirror, I think, because against, like, I brought it online. I brought it in against Tron and against Splinter Twin and stuff, and it's just, like, it's not that great. Like, sometimes, okay, you extract their Splinter Twin, but they can still, like, very easily kill you with, like, their Plan B. Against Tron, the most important card that you need to, like, deal with is Karn. So a lot of the times I would Slaughter Games for Karn, and that would be good, but they can still just, like, assemble Tron, get Eye of Ugin, and then get Emrakul. So, and, like, casting Slaughter Games just for Emrakul is kind of weak, although I did do it once with a Snapcaster after I extracted his Karn, but it's just one of those things that you know, I don't think that there's really too much room to change the deck list, but I think that there's a time and a place for the deck itself. And we'll see what Oath of the Gatewatch does and if there's any more bannings or unbannings and then reevaluate. Like, I'm the kind of person, I play Magic when I need to test for a specific tournament. And then if once that tournament's done, I'm not going to be playing Modern again for a while.
Nope. The Modern is done until the next. What is it standard for this Pro Tour?
No, it's I think it's Modern actually, for Atlanta. So, I have to wait for the set to come out, and then, basically they're gonna do a ban and restrict announcement. And then at that point, I'm gonna have to start making decks.
Okay.
I don't think any of the good testing teams are gonna want me around, so I'm gonna have to test on my own. But I'm perfectly fine with that. I don't think I bring much to the table at the Channel Fireball face to face. I mean, I need an eighth person for a draft. That's fine, but I don't think they want me to be brewing any decks.
Oh man!
Because the original thing I wanted to do with Bring to Light was play the Ad Nauseam deck and play Channel of the Suns. So you go, like, turn 2 Pentad Prism, turn 3, like, Channel of the Suns, Bring to Light for Ad Nauseam, and, like, you know, cast Angel's Grace before that, I guess. And, yeah.
See, whereas that's actually how the Green Storm deck that my buddy and I had been working on, that's how it worked.
Really?
Yeah, so instead of using, like, regular Storm and stuff like that, we would use cards much like, oh my goodness, Hunting Wilds. We would use Hunting Wilds. We would use Search for Tomorrows. All of, like, those land ramp spells. And then we were using, oh my goodness, it's the 2 green and a colorless to untap all your lands.
Early Harvest, yeah.
Early Harvest. And we were using Early Harvest to ramp into just a giant, like, epic experiments. But I was looking at that, and that's where Bring to Light, that's where I was like, oh, geez, I think I could make that fit, because we had Channel the Suns as one of our
rare. Yeah, but you can't really epic experiment into Bring to Light. That won't really do anything.
But no, it won't really do anything for you, but it still gives you one more ability to ramp well.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a kill spell, that's pretty interesting. Although,
yeah, because the kill spell would be an Empty the Warrens or a Grape Shot or something.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's what the Epic Experiments was there for, was really just to try and get your numbers up to hit something like that. So having the Bring to Light, you could find your way to whatever you need to do to get the person.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Briarly and I, we actually had a chat about, because he was playing Pyroclasm, and I'm playing Anger of the Gods. When you're playing Bring to Light, Anger of the Gods obviously makes the most sense. Yeah. He was just playing Rugs, so he was playing Pyroclasm. But I think that with the popularity of this red-green aggro deck, I think that Anger of the Gods is going to replace that. Because I don't think, like, Pyroclasm, obviously it's great against red and against Affinity and stuff. But that red green aggro deck is all X3s and Pyroclasm does very little.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. If modern,
not to mention exiling is a very, very good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely comes in handy. It's a little bit like less now that there's the Abzan Collective Company decks, but back when like Birthing Pod was around, I was super happy to exile all their stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean I think modern needs some work. I know like people have discussed it to death, but I would really like sort of a modern master spinoff with like all new cards. I think that would be really cool. Like a modern legal set that doesn't hit standard. I think that would be really cool if they could make that work somehow.
That would be neat.
I mean, it would have to be like draftable and accessible for people, like not like $20 a pack or whatever. They don't even need to reprint. Well, they would have to reprint some like good cards to be able to sell it, but if they just make some new things, I think it'd be really cool to see like Containment Priest would be a really cool card to have in modern. I think that it would fit in pretty well, and it's in Legacy, but like this new commander that's coming out next week, it's another set that's in Legacy, but not in Modern. So
yeah,
missing out.
That's right. Be sure to pre-order your Commander 2015 edition products on facefacegames.com.
Oh my goodness, pass.
For sale November 13th. I just actually have it, the banner in front of me.
The plugs.
Coincidentally.
Damn plugs.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, I think thanks for coming on. I think you know, a lot of our listeners will be very,
very
curious about this list.
I'm very, yeah.
Curious. Very curious about your list, and we'll play it. Maybe I wonder what Avery is going to play. The Prodigal Son is going to play in Modern. Maybe Living End. Maybe the Scapeshift deck. But I mean, I wish you the best. It's kind of weird I'm setting you off because I'm just going to see you tomorrow. But
yeah. It's been so good talking to you. We'll talk to you again soon.
And it'll again. Actually be legit this time.
And we'll probably play a Booster League match.
We got to jam some Booster League this week. Because I remade my deck and I beat Stefan today and his deck's broken. So I'm feeling pretty good about it. So. Yeah. And then he opened his pack and obviously he got Planner Outburst, which is just like... ridiculous to go with his Gideon Angel Quarantine Field, you know, mono bomb deck. Cool. Well, right. Thanks for having me. And yeah, if you ever need any of your guests bail and you need somebody to talk about some random stuff for no reason, then I'm around. So.
Sweet.
Well, it's hard. The problem is like, you're famous for complaining, and we already have a famous complainer. So,
oh, usually, yeah? Who's the famous complainer?
Well, he's not here, the fucker.
Oh.
So when he's not here, I guess we'll ring you up. I guess we can ring you up.
I always have something to complain about, so definitely.
All right. See you tomorrow, Rob. All right.
See you guys. Thanks.
Whoa. So, Jeremy, we got two... I thought we got two
double
awesome
guest show.
Yeah.
Double guest show.
They
double guest
show.
I'm
knowledge.
Just trying to interrupt you. That's all I'm going to do for the next five
that's,
minutes.
That's a lot of knowledge. So what do you make of it?
Well, would you say that two people we had on the show won a spot to the Pro Tour in an RPTQ playing non-traditional modern decks?
Like, yeah.
Like the Living End, you always see a Living End deck and stuff like that. It's one of those things that is more common. And Scapeshift is on the fringe as well, but they're both decks that can just kind of win out of nowhere, that accelerate through their deck very quickly. They're very, very good at beating cards like Liliana and Thoughtseize and stuff like that. From an empty hand, both decks are deadly because obviously Living End, everything cycles, everything cantrips. Pretty similar with Scapeshift. It's very utility based. It can draw a lot of cards. It's got the ability to counter, to kill your creature, do anything like that with Izzet Charm. So both of those decks were kind of able to attack the format. And wow. Like, a couple winners.
Yeah, I mean, I would, like you said, it's fringy. Like, you expect stuff like the some of the decks that people are complaining about would be Twin, Amulet Bloom, and stuff like that.
Grixis Control. Grixis Control.
Or Grixis, yeah, right.
Everybody
yeah.
was playing Grixis Control.
Right.
So, no, I'm really, really fantastic. Love it. Canadians, love them. You know, it was awesome. We got a scumbag story.
Yeah.
How long has it been since we got a scumbag story? Like,
well, this one was weird too. It was like scumming the scumbag. Like,
yeah. It was sweet.
What do you, it's not like the other person was doing something that scummy. In my opinion.
I don't know, but like we've all played against that player. And you don't usually enjoy those ones.
No, no, you don't.
So
Doug. But as for me, I haven't been doing much in the past week. I've just been busy with other stuff, but still enjoying the Booster League. It's really fun. Just to, you know, I talked about this like two episodes ago, just building a sealed pool, a 60-card deck with just a bunch of sealed packs and having to buy one every time you lose. But every time you lose, you get excited because you get to improve your deck a bit more. And again, it forced me to look up Frank Karsten's article on mana bases. It made me a lot more. It made me think about Magic in a different way as well. So I've been enjoying myself because a lot of concepts I sort of have gone through in my head, whether it's draft or constructed. But here, like, there's still answers that I'm not sure about when constructing my own deck. Because right now I have basically like a ramp deck that tries to play all the bombs via Sylvan Scryings and the 2/1 mana druid that's in Battle for Zendikar. I don't know its name. But the interesting thing for the deck construction for me is the concept of how much threats you want versus these mana fixers. Because if you don't have a right balance, what you happen, you'll just draw your lands and fixers and you don't have the threats to pay off. But if you have too many threats, big threats, then the deck becomes really clunky. And to be able to know what that balance is, it's super challenging. And I don't even know. It's not like, and for here, it's even tougher because you don't get to play four of every card because you're just limited by your pool. So it's not like, oh man, I know for like a Valakut deck in the old days, it's like, oh, four Prime Time, maybe even four Infernal Titans and four, what's that two mana enchantment again?
Oh,
Colony Heart,
yeah, Colony Heart Expedition. Yeah,
so you could just 4/4/4 and you sort of know the amount of threats you want. Then you have X number of Avengers of Zendikar. But here it's, you know, I've had to like dig deep and sort of learn more about the game myself. But that's what I've been doing. And for the foreseeable future, I'm not seeing that many tournaments in the near future. Maybe, like I said, maybe GP Pittsburgh might be a possibility, and maybe some PPTQ grinding, but I've definitely got other things that I want to focus on, some Magic, some non-Magic, but I still work at a Magic store, so I'm very in tune with everything.
Do you guys talk about Magic cards at your store?
Yes. So that's where I'm at right now, but we're going to continue to have a great Magic talk, whether it be guests or just us, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure,
what have you been up to, Jer?
I've got to play some drafts, online. I had a sick day last week, and my sick day, I actually burnt through all of the core set whatever packs, like the Origins packs that I had been building up, and it's because I'm just like the worst person when I'm sick. Because it's like I jump into a draft and I'm sitting in my chair and I'm just like bagged. And then I wake up about 7 picks into the first pack. The worst one was I woke up on pick 3 of pack 2. So I'd play, I would build like a deck, I'd win my first round and then lose the second one. And then I would just not want to play anymore. So I'd quit that one and I'd join another draft and I'd fall asleep and I'd wake up and I'd miss the pick or something stupid like that. Or I'd build the deck, and I didn't like the deck. And then I'd sit there and start playing the first round, get a game into it, and be not wanting to play because I feel miserable, or I'd go to the bathroom to like just barf up my guts and come back and just like, no, let's get another draft. Like I was just in full out, like Chion, join another draft mode. So I just burnt through, just vomited all day and vomited value all day. Like I just burnt through all the tickets and all the packs that I had, which sucked. And the only reason I was playing Origins drafts was because I wanted to get my hands on Jace's and Jace's, Liliana's, and Hangar Backwalkers, because I didn't have any of those. And I would say that I probably lost out on, I'm going to say maybe four pick ones, like probably about five packs worth of, they just goof grabbed the, like the pick for me. I could have opened them up. I could have a playset of Jace's, for all I know, that I just shipped on over to the next guy.
Ooh, oh man, that, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just like, that was terrible. I've still got, I still got like a couple drafts worth of Battle for Zendikar that I'll probably fire out. But where I'm at this point now is I'm going to be playing when I get home this weekend in an Battle for Zendikar sealed PPTQ, so it'll be my first PPTQ in
a
very long time, so I'm excited for that. I already told my wife, it's like, I'm not home on Saturday, so yeah, I'm going to go win a tournament. So,
wow, I'm excited to see how you do, because this sealed format is very interesting.
Yeah, honestly, like, I'm not expecting great things. But I just want to go out and if I can play myself to like a positive record, to like a decent showing, then I'll be very happy. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm looking for. So just to play the last round and need to play the last round, like that's what I would like to do, is be playing the last round for a reason. So that's what I'm aiming for. When I've been successful, I haven't been one of these people who's like, I'm going to win the tournament and been successful. I always find that maybe that just puts too much pressure on me. When I set myself short goals that I can achieve, there's nothing wrong with when I get to 2-0 or 3-0 to say, well, geez, maybe I'll try and win the tournament now. You know, there's nothing wrong with adding a second goal.
Right.
And that was even, again, like I'll go back to my Al Bundy 5 touchdowns, but even GP Vancouver, my goal was I wanted to make day 2. And then when I made day 2, I was like, I want to make top 8. And then I did that. And I was like, okay, I want to win a Grand Prix. Or actually, no, it wasn't even that. I want to go to the Pro Tour. So I had to get my top 4. And then that, I want to win this.
Yeah. It's like second draft crack. Wolf or Silverheart? I want to win this draft.
Well, that one was sick because it was like, yeah, that was like a pack 2 where it's like, okay, it's on, boys.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, my pack 1, pick 1 was Entreat the Angels.
Yeah.
And then I got like 2 white cards throughout the entire draft and it was like terrible. And then it was just like, open up Wolfear, get the dude who makes all humans pro color or something like that. And then get a, oh geez, I got past the Sigarda. Like just like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm excited that you're gonna get to play.
I'm just gonna go and have some fun. Like it'll be awesome.
Yeah, for me it's really as long as I only feel bad. I don't feel bad when I lose. I only feel bad where, of course, when I punt what was probably a win, and you know, that's how I judge myself. I try to, that's my only goal, is try to play as many matches but with as least mistakes as possible, and sometimes that doesn't happen, but you know, there's nothing I can do in after the fact, and I just hope that I pick up the lessons to do better for my next tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a big thing, is people are allowed to make mistakes. You're allowed to make mistakes. Just use your mistakes. Take advantage of your mistakes. Learn from them. like making a mistake is not a bad thing. Just make sure that you take value in that opportunity. That's just a good lesson throughout all of life.
Right. And a lot of times I've even the past, as recent as the past couple of years, you know, I've been guilty of focusing too much on a recent mistake, or dwelling on it when,
and even
I was talking to someone, I forget who, when I realized that every small turn, like I'm going to be playing a lot of tournaments before I die. And every single, even though I fucked up my last WMCQ, that's like one out of many that I'll probably be playing. And I can't, you know, I'm going to make mistakes. So I can't dwell on that one and just hope that for my next, you know, 30, 40, or 50, how many I'm going to play in my lifetime, that I just maximize my chances of winning. That's all I can do and should do. Yeah. And with that, that's our show. That's our fucking show. And can't wait to catch up on how you're doing next week. So
that's our show. Do we want to say something like, oh my God, we're going back to Innistrad? You know, like, don't we want to do any of that shit? Like, geez, man.
Do we?
No, not really.
Not really. Maybe next week.
There's Commanders. Do you care about? Well,
yeah, Commander? I don't. But maybe next week we'll get Jay back, or we'll get into all the Commander details, maybe, and how the cards might have applications in Legacy and stuff.
Do you have like a date or something to go to? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, do you?
No, I don't.
I was about to say, like, oh, okay, well, I get that. Like, you know, sometimes the phone buzzes. Like, sometimes you got to go.
Yeah. So we'll see you guys next week.
Just like that.